Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Thank you so much for joining us. Once again, we're on in this earlier hour to lead you up to NPR's live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump. There's a chance we could also be back with you sometime in the noon hour. That because the word is the president's defense team is probably going to wrap up after 2 hours or so as they close out their opening arguments of defense of the president. So whenever NPR is done with its analysis for today, if that's before one this afternoon, we'll come on with a part two of Air Talk. So we invite you to stay tuned throughout the day here on KPCC. Later this hour, the very latest on the investigation into the tragic helicopter crash in Calabasas on Sunday morning. We're also going to take a look at San Francisco's move to not ask for cash bail for those awaiting trial. But first, I spoke yesterday afternoon with Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. He's campaigning through Iowa. And I began by asking him how he's maximizing the opportunity on the campaign trail with his two biggest competitors, Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, in D.C. for the impeachment trial.
Well, that's not how I'm looking at it, Larry. I was here to begin with. They've been in the Senate for a long time, had to make the tough choices about when to vote, when to not to, but they are locked down. But they've been out here. They were out here in the weekend. I think that who knows how much longer this is going to go, this impeachment trial. But all I'm doing is continuing to do what I had planned on doing, getting to as many Iowa voters as I can to make my case as to why I'd like them to vote for me in the caucus. And this is a tight race out here. And it's a big battle, and the stakes couldn't be higher. The question is, who's going to be able to unite this party and unite the country and beat Donald Trump? And that's what we're all talking about.
With these first two contests in Iowa, then New Hampshire, Bernie Sanders at this point is leading in the polls in both places. You feel like if he comes away with wins in those two states, that is, it is going to do damage to your campaign and your national front runner status or not?
No, I don't think so. And by the way, here in Iowa, we're essentially, I'm ahead in some of the polls, most recent poll to have me ahead. But on balance, we're about a point and a half apart when you talk about it. But look, Iowa's a different place. It's about getting people out, maybe in a snowstorm, to go to a gymnasium and stick there for 3 hours and decide who they're going to caucus for. So I think it's wide open right now, but I feel good about where we are. A lot of enthusiasm. And New Hampshire, there is an overwhelming advantage to any candidate who's either from a neighboring state. I mean, that's been the case for forever, because as they've run their campaigns in their own states, they've spent millions of dollars that flowed over into New Hampshire. But I feel good about New Hampshire as well. But then we go to places where I am really strong, in South Carolina, where I'm winning overwhelmingly, as well as in Nevada, which we're ahead. And so everybody kind of looks at this as the first four. And by the way, California, you guys are going to be starting early voting on February 3rd when Iowa starts up. So, you'll probably get as many votes cast in California as you cast in Iowa on the first day.
We actually would seem for the first time in a long while have a chance to have a significant say in who the nominee will be. I wanted to ask you about the oft-noted split in the Democratic Party between the progressive wing, which appears to be growing, and the moderate wing of the party. Do you think that is overblown, or do you see the fact that the Democratic Party is becoming significantly more progressive?
No, I don't see that part. The fact is that if you take a look at the elections, the way they've gone on, for example, we went out in 2018. Who won? The people who won and won back the House were all those folks who, in fact, I went out and campaigned for. Not just me, but I went out and campaigned for. Typical in the sense that they are very progressive on race and very progressive on gender and very progressive on the very things that we've always been for. But the question is whether or not that the far left of the party is a concern. And by the way, we've always had a far left and a middle and a right in the party. But I think that if you take a look, the numbers indicate that the vast majority of the people in the Democratic, the majority of the people in the Democratic Party are, were now what people are calling moderates. I wish I'd been called a moderate all those times I ran for the Senate in Delaware. I would have won with triple digits, you know, but anyway. So I don't see it that way, Larry, and I don't see any evidence to sustain that.
Let's talk about health care, where you support expanding the Affordable Care Act, passed during your tenure as vice president by President Obama in the Congress. And you've got your two leading opponents both supporting Medicare for all and the public healthcare system being a self-contained entity. Why do you think it's better to have a private system with a public option versus a fully public healthcare system?
Look at all the people you know, Larry, who work for corporations, particularly those who are in labor unions that gave up significant wage increases in order to have a very fulsome private health insurance policy that their employer is providing that they have paid for. Under the arguments being put forward by Senator Sanders and to a less extent by Senator Warren, they would have to give up that insurance no matter what. It could only no private insurance whatsoever. And then when asked about whether or not how you pay for this, you have the leading proponent of this, Senator Sanders, saying, "In effect, I don't know how much it will cost. Your guess is as good as mine." How are you going to pass something, Larry, when you go into the United States Congress? I worked like the devil to get Obamacare passed, and I want to get it expanded. How are you going to go into the United States Congress in a democratically controlled Congress and say, I can't tell you how much it's going to cost? Granted, the estimates were it's going to be over $30 trillion over 10 years, and I don't know where the money's going to come from, but don't worry about it. We're okay. Come on. You got to get realistic here. And so I lay out exactly how people are going to what they can get under the Obamacare is expanded by me. Obamacare with a public option. If you want Medicare, you can qualify for it and buy it as an option under my plan. You also can be in a situation where you don't have to ever have a out-of-pocket expense if even if you have the money to pay for your own insurance buy-in for more than $1,000. We also significantly cut the cost of drug prices. Drugs cannot increase prices beyond the cost of inflation. We're going to be able to negotiate through Medicare for what price we're going to charge, and any company can, in fact, charge under my option or under any sale of the drug. So, you know, there's and guess what? I can get it done. I know how hard it is. I know how hard it is to pass healthcare.
All right. I wanted to ask you, Mr. Biden, as well. Some Democrats, if you were the nominee or whoever the nominee is, would want to see that person really respond like for like with President Trump in debates during the campaign season and be able to parry him. There are others who think it's better to take a high road and not get into a caustic back and forth with President Trump. If you were to be your party's nominee and to debate him and campaign against him, what would be your approach to responding to his particularly caustic comments?
Respond to his lies about what, in fact, he said he was going to do and what he's done. He is only comfortable debating things that have nothing to do with policy. I'm looking forward to debating him on foreign policy, which he appears to know nothing about and have very little. He doesn't even listen to his own commanders. He doesn't listen to his own people.
But if he comes after you personally, how will you respond?
I'm looking forward to that. The way I'll respond is point out that what he doesn't know. Look, the only place this president is comfortable debating is on subjects he knows something about. And that is having to do with attacks and having to do with just trying to slime the other candidate. He doesn't know much about the issues. He doesn't know much about what is going on in terms of everything from the economy to housing on down the line. For example, I guess everybody else reported last week. He said the reason why people have a pre-existing conditions covered is because he did it. Now, instead of talking about him being lying about it, I'm just going to point out he has no idea. He's in court trying to get rid of from beginning to end Obamacare. And he's out there saying The reason why people have pre-existing conditions, look,
all right,
that they're covered because of him.
Let me ask you, because we're in the midst of the impeachment trial in the Senate, and the defense opening arguments by the president's attorneys are tying you and your son, Hunter, to corruption in Ukraine, and claiming that the president, in bringing up your name with Hunter's, was to try and further this anti-corruption effort. Your response to that contention?
Look, nobody, including his own administration under oath, said anything that I did anything other than an incredibly good job, an honorable job in my role as dealing with Ukraine. And I followed and I had the support of the IMF. I had the support of the World Bank. I had support of every one of our European allies. I had support of the EU. I had support across the board. I did my job. The question you have to ask yourself is, did he do his job? And why is it that he's decided to ask a foreign leader to not even actually do an investigation, but announce an investigation of me? Why do you think that's happening, old buddy? Larry, I'm not going to play his game.
Had you talked with your son, Hunter, or other family members about the sensitivity of family members accepting a position which might be perceived as trying to leverage their relationship with you? Is that something you talked about as a family?
No, they'd never done that before. But here's what happened. My son has done an interview, an extensive interview and a long article answering those questions. And he said, in retrospect, he wished he hadn't done it. No one's accused him of having done anything wrong, by the way. It's just that the appearance. And he said he wished he had never done it because he didn't count on thugs like Rudy Giuliani and the guys surrounding him working with the president to try to besmirch my name. But again, let's stay focused here. Don't play his game, Larry. This is all about what he does all the time. Take your eye off the ball. Focus on something that has nothing to do with him. I released 21 years of my tax returns, Larry. Ask him to release one. If he wants to fight corruption, let's see what corruption he's engaged in. Engage. Give us your tax returns, Mr. President. I'm a completely open book.
I'm impressed you have 21 years of tax returns. That's an astounding archive. Mr. Biden, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it, and we look forward to talking with you down the road during this campaign.
I'm looking forward to seeing you in person, Larry.
Thank you very much for the time. Former Vice President Joe Biden, Democratic presidential candidate. I spoke with him yesterday afternoon as he was on the campaign trail in Iowa. Coming up, we'll take a look at the very latest on the investigation and the tragic helicopter crash Sunday morning in Calabasas, which took the life of Laker Kobe Bryant and eight others with deep ties to this community. We'll be back in just 1 minute on Air Talk.